Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man of uncommon intelligence and actually a quite distinguished background in the business of intelligence is our first guest. He is my colleague at the Center for Security Policy, our Senior Vice President for Policy and Programs, Fred Flights. As I think you probably know by now, he has been a man in a variety of positions in the intelligence community, is an analyst at the Central Intelligence Agency specializing in nonproliferation and related matters, as a chief of staff to Ambassador John Bolton in the Department of State, and as a professional staff member on the House Intelligence Committee. In all of these capacities, he has honed his skills and made him an absolutely invaluable resource, not only for us at the Center, but also for readers of National Review Online and other publications and Fox News and other media outlets, in which he is currently making a very substantial contribution to the debate about national security policy. Fred Flights, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Good to be here, Frank.
You've written recently about a problem that I'm really very concerned about, and I know you are as well. You have more basis for judging it than I, but you know it when you see it, I think, and that is politicization of the intelligence community. Talk a bit about what you have found in your inquiries in that area.
Well, I regret through my time in government as a CIA analyst, I saw this all too often. It was pretty bad during the Clinton years. I'm worried now that there are reports that Defense Department intelligence analysts slanted their analysis of ISIS to favor the administration's position that ISIS is on the run and that the administration's policy is succeeding. And I'm now concerned that there are reports that the people who said this, there's been retaliation against them, which I regret to say I have seen in the government before under the Clinton years. And I'm worried that this is going on in other intelligence agencies. I went to a briefing at CIA, an unclassified briefing last August, where they talked about the nuclear deal with Iran, and it sounded like a sales presentation from the White House. It was terrible. And my other former intelligence analyst who worked in arms control, they told me the same thing afterwards, just thinking like, well, he didn't mention the secret side deals. He didn't mention problems with verification. So I'm very concerned the president's not getting the objective analysis he needs to defend this.
Well, it's not entirely clear he would be open to it either. And my guess is that some of the skewing of intelligence along the lines you've just talked about is a direct result, really, of the desire of the president, or at least the people around him, to ensure that there is a conformity to the views that are served up, and that being aligned pretty much with the policies of the government. Fred, you mentioned some personal experience with retribution against people who were raising concerns about this kind of conduct. I know you yourself were subjected to some of that in the past, and also were very concerned about an incident in which the intelligence community seemed to be, well, skewing its analysis, even in the absence of, you know, any kind of direction from the administration. Specifically, I'm thinking of the National Intelligence Estimate on Iran's nuclear weapons program in 2007. Would you talk a little bit about those experiences?
Well, concerning this estimate in 2007, the intelligence community put out a paper that said that Iran's nuclear program was halted in 2003. And I read this analysis as a member of the House Intelligence Committee staff. And frankly, the argument was bad, the evidence was really weak, and it was written by former State Department officers who at the time happened to be working for the intelligence community. They were referred to in the Wall Street Journal as rabid anti-Bush partisans. But this sort of became, you know, conventional wisdom that the Iranian nuclear program was halted, and it undermined Bush administration Iran policy for the rest of the administration. Lo and behold, in December 2015, the IAEA said that Iran's nuclear weapons program continued until 2009, at least until 2009. It was blatant politicization, and no one paid for it.
No, and except the American people, I'm afraid, especially as we're looking at a program that, as you've done so much to document, Fred, is continuing apace in Iran, with the benefit now of over $100 billion of additional wherewithal to pursue it. Speaking of which, you have also been following closely, Fred, the connections between the Iranian nuclear program and missile program and those of North Korea. There was evidently a failed test by North Korea of a ballistic missile today. Would you share any insights you have on sort of the state of its program and, perhaps more importantly, the state of this alliance between two rogue actors of a very malign kind?
Well, on I think it was Thursday, April 14th, North Korea tested what is believed to be a Musudan medium-range mobile ballistic missile with a range of 1,500 to 2,500 miles. And there's a lot of talking heads on TV today saying, well, another failed test. That's just the wrong approach. This was a test, which means the North Koreans are learning from their experience. Most of their initial tests of missiles tend to fail, but they learn from them. There is collaboration between North Korea and Iran in missiles. We know that. And I think it's probably collaboration concerning nuclear weapons. There's reports that the North Koreans are trying to miniaturize a warhead to fit in its ballistic missiles. And DIA officials have repeatedly said they think that this is the case. So I think this is a dangerous situation where North Korea is getting closer to being able to deliver a nuclear warhead that could hit the continental United States, and that this technology may be being shared with Iran.
There is also a report, as you know, notably from a friend and colleague of ours, Dr. Peter Pry, to the effect that what may be going on one or the other of these North Korean missiles is an electromagnetic pulse capability, perhaps even a super EMP weapon. Fred, in your assessment of this program and your knowledge of what they've obtained from others like the Russians, do you credit that as a distinct possibility at this point?
I think it is a real possibility because given the limited size of North Korea's missile arsenal and the limited size of its nuclear program, an EMP weapon is the perfect way for it to use its nuclear arsenal and get the most bang for the buck. And I think it makes perfect sense. The technology is there. And, in that way, they could fire a warhead with a relatively small yield over the United States and do enormous damage to the U.S. infrastructure, much more than a single nuclear weapon could do.
Almost incalculable damage. Fred, let me ask you about one other issue that I think you're remarking on, as am I, as evidence of a kind of ratcheting up inexorably of challenges to this country and, well, for that matter, threats to it. And that would be the kind of provocative behavior that the Russians have been engaged in. It's been penetrating our airspace with nuclear-capable bombers and that of our allies. It's been making an array of nuclear threats. Most recently, we've had what appeared to be sort of 20 different sort of simulated attacks on a destroyer in the Baltic Sea. What's going on here, and what are the implications if this kind of behavior is essentially ignored by our government?
Well, it's very dangerous. These two Russian jets recently buzzed a U.S. aircraft carrier. This is the kind of reckless maneuver that could lead to an armed conflict because of miscalculation. This is just something that should never happen. The way I read it is this is simply another sign, and I think it's related to President Putin's refusal to attend President Obama's nuclear security summit. It's simply a sign that this president has no respect on the international stage. Putin despises Obama and has no regard for him, no respect at all for him as a leader. And I think these incidents are an opportunity for Putin to express that sentiment.
Yeah. Well, if that's all it is, it's bad enough. But if it actually is kind of a precursor to further acts of aggression that may be even more material and deadly, it will be, you know, the year of living dangerously, as I'm fond of calling it, for the United States, for its people, for its interests and allies, for sure. Fred, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you, as always, for your insights on all of these topics and your great work at National View Online, Fox News, and, of course, with our Center for Security Policy. We trust you'll keep it up and come back to us again next week. Next up, we'll talk with Michael Anderson, a former United States Marine and expert on Korea. Fill down a bit more on what it's up to at the moment and what it might mean for you right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Hi, I'm Tim McGraw. The men and women of the Air Force Reserve play a vital role in protecting us at home and abroad. They are your neighbors, whose dedication to our country and commitment to their communities call them to serve. Dedication, commitment, and service. It happens every day at home and around the world. They're your neighbors, making a difference.
Joel Klein catches a 7 o'clock train after his evening CPR class at the American Red Cross.
Ron Garrity's on the same train. He's had a rough day and doesn't feel like himself. Until he feels the sudden tightness in his chest, Ron never thought he'd actually have a heart attack.
Until Joel is administering CPR, he never thought he'd actually save a life.
When you train with the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say, joined for the first time, I believe, by Major Michael Anderson, now a United States Marine Corps officer, retired,
I served, among other things, in the intelligence business. We always place a premium on that here, people who bring intelligence to the subject, but also have some mastery of the black art of understanding what is going on in the world. He has a graduate degree from the Naval Postgraduate School, a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy as well, and is a 20-year veteran of the United States Marine Corps. He has also been a dean of terrorism and counterterrorism at the Henley Putnam University. These days, he is team lead at Veritas LLC. Michael Anderson, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us, sir.
Great to be with you.
I'd like to sort of get your thoughts as a man who's served in uniform and also in the intelligence business about what we're learning these days from the attacks that have taken place of late, most recently, of course, in Brussels, Belgium. Are there insights about both what we have learned and what we should be taking away from what we've learned that are worth noting?
Well, I think with Brussels, you get a couple points. I mean, certainly Europe has some pretty lax immigration policies and whatnot that have allowed Muslim populations to grow within Europe. And certainly with the refugees that are flowing in, it allows, they don't check very well, and they're allowing these sleeper cells and operatives to slip in there and basically do their dirty work. We saw it in Paris. We saw it with Brussels. The problem for the United States is that we've seen our porous southern border, and even the Department of Homeland Security Secretary and our own FBI director have said, look, we can't vet these people. You know, and certainly vetting with background investigations, it takes, a mountain of paperwork and databases you can fit into. So when you don't have that, they can slip in and do the things that they need to do and whatnot. So I think it bodes very badly for the United States, and it's just a harbinger of things to come.
Mm. You know, I'm struck by one other piece of this, though, and that is that there is, in addition to the jihadists and the sleeper cells and the networks and so on, it seems, an infrastructure that these guys are tapping into. And whether it's mosques or cultural centers or various front groups or influence operations or Islamic societies or what have you, you've got, well, as Mao used to call it, a sea within which the terrorists swim and do so more or less with impunity. How concerned should we be about that infrastructure and I think the Muslim Brotherhood that has been building it there and here?
Well, I think it's particularly troubling because we do have groups within the United States that operate under the guise of Arab-American relations. We have, you know, various societies. One of the ones that I've been kind of looking into is CARE, you know, the Center for American-Islamic Relations. And in my own home state of Illinois, I mean, you've got major officials, Dick Durbin, Luis Gutierrez, that have been championing some of the things that they're doing. And this is a group that's been profiled in many news stories that have supported Hamas, and some of their leadership has had deep ties to the Muslim Brotherhood and that sort of thing. So we turn a blind eye to these things at our own peril. And, you know, they're looking to basically collapse the United States from within and using a lot of our freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom of speech. They're basically taking it to its extreme and using it against us. So, I think some of these groups need to be looked at very, very deeply and, you know, held to account for the ties that they do have.
Boy, I couldn't agree with you more. Michael Anderson is our guest. You've been writing a blog at westernfreepress.com, and one of the people that you have quite critically and I think properly held accountable for some of this willful blindness, Michael, has been the former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, now, of course, running for president on her record, in part, as, you know, one of the mavens of American foreign policy. Given the indictment you've just handed down, how serious do you think is a charge against her in this regard, whether it's Benghazi attitude towards the Muslim Brotherhood more generally, or for that matter, her conduct with respect to the handling of classified information on her email server. Is she fit to be commander in chief in your personal judgment?
Well, personally, I don't think so. I mean, I've for the last, well, over 20 years, I've held a clearance and some of the highest levels at the SCI levels and been read into some special access programs. Those words don't get thrown around, you know, just easily. I mean, they may be a buzzword to the press, but, you know, special access programs are you know, aptly named. I mean, not everybody's read into those things, and it's for good
reason.
Very
few people are read into them as a general rule,
absolutely.
In my experience.
Absolutely. It's a very, very closely held list. There's usually a limited number of people that can be read onto those programs. And if the list is full, you have to wait for somebody to drop off. So it's very tightly controlled. I think overall for Hillary Clinton, just the fact that, you know, the horrors of Benghazi and the things that came out, the delays and the stand down orders, and her lackadaisical attitude towards security of our national security information. And it just is basically an attitude that it doesn't really matter, that what she does is above the law. You know, really, that's for other people. It doesn't really apply to her. And it's a huge weakness. I mean, it's an absolute gap and target. I mean, for those that want to hurt the United States, somebody that's lackadaisical, that's the people that, you know, counterintelligence professionals and intelligence professionals will target because they're arrogant. They're arrogant and they have a lot of blind spots and they think that they're untouchable. Those are the people that anybody that's dealing in human intelligence will target.
Yeah. And if they leave themselves particularly vulnerable to that kind of targeting through this kind of mishandling of classified information.
And it's an underestimation of our enemies and how aggressive they are. And they're probing the lines every day, every hour. And if we don't, you know, tighten up and really take this stuff seriously, you know, we've had secrets leak before, and it'll just be a treasure trove for those that want to hurt us.
You bet. Hey, let me switch gears with you in our final minute or so. Michael Anderson, can you just give me a sort of macro picture of, as a veteran yourself, how you believe the veterans' issues are being handled at the moment? There's a lot of lip service paid to it, but whether it's with respect to investigation of scandals or improvement of service to the veterans, where are we?
I think, you know, with the Obama administration, I think it's pretty much weak tea. I mean, it's a lot of posturing. It's, you know, officials going back to their job after, you know, the requisite amount of time that the American people have kind of forgotten about it, or they think that the American people have forgotten about it. You know, the wait times haven't been accurately looked into. I think I saw an article the other day where it said, you know, the wait times were within the parameters of, you know, acceptable limits or whatever, however they phrased it. I mean, the simple fact is I have a grandfather that's about 80 plus. He's about 83 and has a heart condition. He's had a heart condition, you know, after 37 years of driving a truck. And the thing is that, you know, he can't go to a VA hospital if he wants to do all this stuff because it's 90 and 120 miles away. So he didn't have to deal with the wait time so much. I mean, he's got good coverage through the Teamsters and other things, but that's what veterans have to deal with. I mean, they have to deal with a long, you know, 6 to 9 months waiting after they get out to get their VA, you know, notification. So, and how much disability they're going to get. So I think it's a system that needs to be revamped. I mean, I like what I hear from the Republican candidates to, you know, let veterans go out to any private provider. The system should be streamlined, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Michael Anderson, thank you so much for your time today and for your service to our country in uniform and that you are rendering at the moment at Veritas LLC. Keep it up. Come back to us again, if you would, sir, in the near future. Next up, we're joined by Bill Gertz. He'll take us inside the ring.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family, that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260. The Answer.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Barack Obama has reduced the U.S. Navy to its smallest size since before World War I. He's also allowed our sailors to be subjected to serial, provocative humiliations by adversaries around the world. Taken together, you have a formula for disaster. For example, the Iranians have fired missiles in close proximity to Navy vessels. They then actually seized two of them. Chinese threats to attack American naval forces operating in international airspace and waters have gone unanswered, thanks to Team Obama spurning our top Pacific commander's warnings that we must resist before it's too late. This week, Russian jets simulated 20 attacks on a U.S. destroyer in the Baltic Sea. The Pentagon simply complained about the perpetrators' lack of professionalism. And less deterred, such provocations will eventually precipitate conflicts. If that's to be avoided, we must impose real costs now. This is Frank Gaffney.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. Iran has made headlines lately due to a series of ballistic missile tests. It was written on some of these missiles, Israel must be wiped off the face of the earth. The missile tests did not violate the July 2015 nuclear deal. Missiles were supposed to be in that deal, but were dropped at the last minute. As a result, sanctions against Iran that were lifted in the Iran deal cannot be reimposed due to the missile tests. The missile tests do violate UN Security Council resolutions, but UN sanctions will not be reimposed due to Russian and Chinese Security Council vetoes. Meaningful American sanctions won't be imposed because the Obama administration does not want to jeopardize President Obama's legacy nuclear agreement with Iran. So what does this mean? Despite the nuclear deal, Iran will continue to test ballistic missiles for the remainder of the Obama presidency, which are being developed as delivery systems for its nuclear weapons program. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. One of the high points of our week is a guided tour inside the ring, that is to say, inside the national security firmament, conducted by one of the men who understands it better than just about anybody else in Washington, and certainly reports on it more accurately and with greater clarity than anyone else, and that is, of course, Bill Gertz. He is the senior editor of the Washington Free Beacon and also the prize-winning columnist of a column of that name, Inside the Ring at the Washington Times, the author of six best-selling books, including The Failure Factory. Bill Gertz, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the program.
Well, as ever, you've been doing some really extraordinarily important reporting, Bill, on a whole host of things, and I want to go through a couple of them with you quickly. Maybe starting with the treatment that Admiral Harry Harris has been receiving from the Obama administration as he's raised an alarm as the commander of our Pacific forces about what the Chinese are doing in the South China Sea. Give us the backstory on that.
Sure. Yeah, there was a Navy Times piece that said that the White House was trying to gag Admiral Harris, who's been undoubtedly the most outspoken Pacific Command commander that we've seen in decades. Harris came out with his own statement and said, no, it's not true, and that he is definitely leaning forward in terms of pressing the Chinese on the South China Sea. And I think that's accurate. My sense is that there's a lot going on in the background that's actually positive, which is probably the reason that the story prompted this idea that the White House was trying to silence him. The White House is full of left-wing anti-Americans, basically. And, you know, we have an NSC staff now that's like 400 people. It's like a new bureaucracy, another failure factory. So I think that's probably what's behind it.
Yeah. Well, it's I'm reminded, as you say that, Bill, of the three former Obama secretaries of defense, Bob Gates, Leon Panetta, and Chuck Hagel, who appeared on Brett Baer's program last week on the state of the military and pretty much laid out, you know, how horrifying their experience was at the hands of this sort of micromanagement out of the White House staff and NSC. Bill, on this business with the Chinese, though, you've reported that they are now still expanding the buildup of the islands that they've taken, essentially manufactured in the South China Sea. Talk a bit about what's happening there.
Yeah, I had a piece that, in the Free Beacon this week, which talked about how the Chinese internet has disclosed the buildup on a special place called Scarborough Shoal. Now, the Chinese have been building up like 3,000 acres of kind of what Harris called the wall of sand in the South China Sea. But in particular, the administration is trying to head off a major buildup on this shoal, which is about the size of Washington, D.C. in area. And they're doing a major buildup, and it was disclosed. They're building a runway. They're building a deep harbor. And one of the graphics showed three Chinese warships deployed. Now, the reason this is strategically significant is because Scarborough Shoal is probably 150 miles from Subic Bay. Now, the Secretary of Defense is currently in the region. He's going to, out on the USS aircraft carrier Stennis, which is plying the South China Sea in a show of force against these Chinese maritime claims. The Chinese are claiming the entire sea, but things are really coming to a head over Scarborough Shoal. And like I say, the Chinese tipped their hand on the internet, and the U.S. has been trying to prevent them from going ahead with this major buildup on this specifically strategic shoal.
You will be following this closely, Bill Gertz, and thanks to your good work, we will as well. I hope you'll keep us apprised as to how the administration's toing and froing and Harry Harris's forward-leaning sorts. Let me ask you, speaking of the Chinese, about one other thing you reported on this week, and that is that Xi Jinping, the president of China, seems to have been caught up a bit, at least through family members, in some of these scandalous activities, offshore financing and business schemes coming out of these Panama Papers, as they're called. What's the story there, and what do you think the repercussions might be for him and his rule?
It's a very significant disclosure. The Panama Papers were based from somebody hacked into this law firm that disclosed how foreign leaders were using the offshore companies to hide money. And in this case, it touched upon the supreme leader in China, Xi Jinping, who his brother-in-law and his older sister owned three companies in the British Virgin Islands. Chinese censors have been working overtime to try and squelch the story. I talked to somebody who came back from China, and they said within China, it's almost unknown, the Xi Jinping angle. So the Chinese are really, this tells you how sensitive it is for them. And the reason it is because the Chinese leader has made anti-corruption a key feature of his entire regime. He's purged hundreds, if not thousands, of officials, including some of the top Politburo people, which critics say is not really for anti-corruption, but is more to get rid of potential rivals. So now his enemies, and he's created a lot of them, will have some ammunition with these Panama Papers disclosures about his relations hiding money in the Caribbean.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot with Gordon Chang and others about the turmoil inside China. This certainly can only exacerbate it. Bill, speaking of North Asia, give us a sense of what you think we're hearing from this defector from North Korea, who is now in South Korean hands. You've also written about some intelligence sharing, and what might we as a result learn from his defection?
Yeah, this is a big break for the intelligence community in the U.S. as well as South Korea and Japan. A colonel in something called the Reconnaissance General Bureau, which is a relatively new intelligence agency for the North Korean military, and this colonel defected to China, broke out through China, and eventually made his way to South Korea, and has been providing some valuable insights into this regime in North Korea, which is so opaque and is really what the intelligence community calls the hardest of the hard targets, trying to find out. So anytime you get a senior official like that, they've been getting a lot of good information about overseas North Korean activities, as well as the nuclear and missile programs. And we saw just in February, the Kim Jong-un regime executed the military chief of staff. And I got a sense that there's it was probably related to this defection.
Mm. We will be very interested to hear what you learn about that, needless to say. Bill Gertz of the Washington Free Beacon and Washington Times. Let me ask you about one other piece that you've written about this week, and that is something that really struck me when an officer in the United States military would do something like this. They would call it command interference. Bill, talk about what President Obama said about Hillary Clinton's handling of emails that might interfere with the investigation of those seemingly felonious acts of misconduct.
Yes, the president went on Fox News Sunday this week, and basically in his defense of Hillary Clinton's scandalous email server, he basically redefined the definition of classified information. The quote was something like, well, there's classified information and then there's classified. In other words, he was definitely downplaying the significance of this. And I pointed out in my Inside the Ring column this week that the president in 2009, his own executive directive outlined the levels of classification and how they're defined. And any classified information is defined by the amount of damage it would do if the information is disclosed. So here you have the president essentially redefining this legal definition. And really, a lot of security officials I talked to this week were appalled that the administration has taken such an approach. And I pointed out that this administration has been the worst in U.S. history in terms of leaks and damage. First, there was WikiLeaks, which 750,000 classified documents. Then you would think they would try and fix it, but no. Then came Edward Snowden, where 1.7 million top secret NSA documents were stolen and disclosed. So they've done enormous damage on the classified information front.
Well, then you throw in Hillary Clinton into the mix. Bill Gertz, we have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for your time today, for the great work you do at the Washington Free Beacon and the Washington Times. Your reporting on all of these issues and so much more that we don't get a chance to cover is really deeply appreciated. And keep it up, my friend. Come back to us again next week. We'll talk next with Dan Cadman of the Center for Immigration Studies about Guantanamo Bay, the criminal justice reform program, and more.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states. One that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Every year, more American adults die from vaccine-preventable diseases than from breast cancer, traffic accidents, or AIDS. Vaccines like the one for pneumococcal disease can protect adults from illnesses that can cause missed days of work, hospitalization, and even death. Pneumococcal disease is an infection that can lead to pneumonia, meningitis, or even a severe blood infection. That's just one example of an infection that can spread from person to person. Getting vaccinated can help protect you and those close to you. I'm Dr. Susan Rehm of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. When I speak with my patients, I urge them to get all their recommended vaccines. Now I'm urging you to speak with your doctor to find out which vaccines you need. For more information about the vaccines that are recommended for adults and the diseases they prevent, like HPV, whooping cough, tetanus, and shingles, visit adultvaccination.org. That's www.adultvaccination.org.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
I lost my healthy 27-year-old son to influenza. Jacob wasn't someone you'd expect to die from the flu. He was strong, a martial arts athlete. After 5 weeks of fighting, Jacob died.
I'm Dr. Bill Schaffner of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. Each year, influenza claims the lives of Americans of all ages, including healthy young adults like Jacob. Ask about vaccination the next time you're at your doctor's office or pharmacy. Visit adultvaccination.org.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We're joined for the first time, I believe, by Dan Cadman, a fellow at an organization that I regard as absolutely indispensable. It is the Center for Immigration Studies.
Dan brings to it a wealth of experience, in fact, 30 years of experience, to put a fine point on it, as an Immigration and Naturalization Service and Immigration and Customs Enforcement official, including service as a senior supervisor and manager in those organizations' headquarters, as well as experience in the field. Dan Cadman, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Thank you for all of that service and that you're rendering these days at the Center for Immigration Studies.
Thank you for having me.
You've been writing on several topics of particular interest to me, and I'd like to go through a couple of them with you if we can. Let's start with your views on what's happening with Guantanamo Bay and the implications of the president bringing to this country some of the remaining jihadists that he can't seem to foist onto others and believes can safely be brought here.
I'm deeply concerned about where the government is headed in that regard. Toward the end of February, Ashton Carter, the Secretary of Defense, testified before Congress that the remaining detainees are so dangerous that DOD could not contemplate transferring them to foreign countries. And with that in mind, had developed plans that they were forwarding to Congress to transfer those detainees to facilities in the United States for holding in incarceration as enemy combatants. I don't really see the pressing need to close Guantanamo. It is, to my way of thinking, a much better option, because when these individuals are brought into the United States as immigration parolees, which inevitably they will be, even though they may also be classified as enemy combatants, a whole host of legal issues are going to float to the surface that don't arise as long as they're kept in Guantanamo.
And those legal issues will be litigated, we can be sure, by the aggressive Gitmo bar. And is it your judgment, Dan Cadman, that they may find receptive judges in the federal judiciary and could conceivably even be set free in this country, these jihadists from Gitmo?
I don't see that outside the realm of possibility at all. It's frankly a case where our values are in conflict with our values. We understand clearly that, you know, even if the president minces words about a war with radical Islamic terror, most Americans understand that that's an existential battle, but they are also extremely queasy about the notion of keeping someone in indefinite detention, which as alien parolees and enemy combatants they would be, and they're without trial, without removal proceedings. So maybe the government gets away with that for a year, maybe 2 years, but once they're on U.S. soil, unambiguously on U.S. soil, you can bet that petitions for habeas corpus are going to fly. They are going to fly.
You can bet, and as I say, I think you can also bet that you'll find a judge that's willing to act favorably on it. Speaking of jihadis and jails, I wonder what your thoughts are, Dan Cadman of the Center for Immigration Studies, about this effort now being made on Capitol Hill on a bipartisan basis that would almost certainly result in the release of folks who are not only criminal, violent, you know, felons, some of whom perhaps on top of everything else are aliens, but that may well have been converted to jihad while in the slammer. Is this something that gives rise to yet another threat vector we ought to be very concerned about?
I certainly think so. It's being passed as criminal justice reform, and it's a bizarre consortium of establishment Republicans, Democrats, and even some libertarian Republicans. But the net consequence is going to be that literally thousands of aliens are going to be released under a program that would alleviate the sentences under which they were originally sent to prison. And yes, there's certainly a possibility that some number of these individuals might have radicalized in prison, but we also face the very real possibility that any number of those aliens will also be cartel members who were actually caught smuggling the drugs across the border and will be released under this bill into the hands of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which may or may not remove them under the Obama administration. But even if they're removed, you know, what's the penalty in sending them back to the border to begin business where they left off before they were incarcerated? Doesn't make any sense.
No, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that I've been horrified to learn, and I know you are aware of, Dan, is the recidivism rate of these guys. It's not quite 100%, but it isn't a whole lot south of that either. And if that's the case, we really are simply repopulating and augmenting what is already, as you know so well, a huge problem with drug trafficking in this country, aren't we?
Absolutely so. Absolutely so. It is insane to reward malefactors this way by releasing them from prison under the mistaken theory that this somehow is alleviating the jail population in a reasonable way. It's not. And I'm chagrined that it's being passed off as, you know, letting the kid out of jail early who got busted with, you know, maybe
a bag of dope
in his pocket, a bag of marijuana. That's not the case. You're talking about people who have been trafficking heroin, methamphetamine, cocaine, the worst kinds of drugs. And I saw recently that there was some dickering over the bill to try and modify it and amend some of it. And I'm still completely shocked to see that none of those amendments closed the loophole that allows people caught smuggling drugs across the international border to benefit from early release.
It's just mind-boggling. I really think of this as national security fraud and public safety fraud at that, Dan, in that these folks are being described almost invariably as nonviolent. And in your experience, how far from the mark is that?
That's bogus. That's completely bogus. You don't get involved with the Gulf Cartel or Los Zetas at any level without a massive propensity to violence whenever it's necessary.
And the very act, as others have pointed out to me here in the Secure Freedom Radio, is the act of, you know, trafficking in these drugs and what they do to people's lives is an act of violence in its own right. Hey, before I let you go, Dan Cadman, again, a career officer in INS and ICE, talk a little bit, if you would, about this problem with the Cuban aliens. I have to say, I'm really struck by what we've been allowing to happen under circumstances very different than the early days of trying to help people fleeing Castro's repression.
You now have thousands of Cubans queuing up on the southern border, literally standing at ports of entry where they are received, paroled into the United States under the guise of family unification, and then proceed to accrue the benefits of the Cuban Adjustment Act. And it's astounding that some of the newspapers in South Florida tracking some of these individuals have discovered they come, they gain social welfare benefits, and they travel back to Cuba and have post office drop boxes where they receive their checks, which are then mailed on to them back in the island.
This is a subject for a much longer conversation. I hope we'll get you back on very soon. Dan Cadman of the Center for Immigration Studies and a distinguished career officer in the Immigration and Naturalization Services and Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Thank you for all of that service, sir, and for joining us today to talk about it. I hope you'll do it again soon. And the rest of you will join us again Monday, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Afty. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.